Okay, good morning. First of all, thank you. Thank Bnei Yeshurun, that the entire Tina community. Thank Yeshiva HaKotel for sponsoring all this. This is, I don't know if everybody is aware of how long this took to put together, but I really give you a tremendous yesher koach for it's really a fantastic thing. And just looking at the layout and the different choices that you have of people to hear today is really, really phenomenal. If I could, since half the room or almost half the room are students of mine, notice I didn't say former students, but students of mine, and now it's more than half the room are students of mine. if I could just ask everyone, since we are a small group, just to quickly introduce yourselves, and if it's not students, then it's parents of students, okay? So if you could just introduce yourselves, I'd just greatly appreciate it.
Lawrence Schreiber.
Lawrence Schreiber, okay? Just for everybody else's.
My name's
a... What?
The name.
Just a name, yeah, just have, you know, half a sense.
Secretary Eliana Sohn, Zahra Higglesby, Shira Kaffer.
Excuse me?
Tanya Sarek.
Okay.
Vincent Fisher.
Okay.
Libby Pine.
Okay, great. Okay, so I don't know if everybody in the room knows each other, because I think it's the entire community, so I don't know who does know each other, who doesn't. But if you have, after this is over, if you have any questions after I'm done. Now, I'm a teacher by trade, even though right now I'm a principal of a school, but you know that the word principal means principal teacher. So by trade, I'm a teacher. I do not lecture. I have lots to say. And things to share with you, but fundamentally, I like to get input from my students. So for the next half hour or so, you are all my students. Welcome to those of you who just came in. You could just introduce yourself. I'd appreciate it. Yeah. Okay, and you have to introduce yourself. Okay, thank you, Ayala. Okay, and you are?
I'm Ben Dash.
Okay. Oh, I know you too. Dina's that. Dina? Yeah. Okay. Okay. All right. Isn't that less? That is our claim to fame, is it not? Okay. I was in my kitchen this morning, and my grandchildren are visiting for the weekend. So my wife was sitting at the table reading a book to all four of them, all four of that family's family's children, and the book had something to do with buckets. Now. We all think of buckets, and we think of bucket lists and things that we should do, you know, things that we want to accomplish in our lives, in our lifetime. But this was a book about, for kids, and it was a book about filling using your bucket as a filler and not as a dipper, meaning that you want to take your bucket and fill other people's buckets with it, as opposed to using your bucket to dip into other people's things and taking things away from them. It was a beautiful idea for little children about the fact that at any given time, at any given moment, we have the opportunity to be filling other people's buckets. In more psychological terms, they talk about the emotional bank account, where we have a certain amount of emotional energy, and if we fill ourselves with positive emotional energy, then we have the capacity to give to others. And if we deplete or take away other people's emotional energy, then our relationships simply fall apart. So put that aside for a moment, because I think that as she was reading the book, and I was mesmerized by it, not so much by the book, but about the whole image of they're sitting around the kitchen table at breakfast, and she's got them all mesmerized with this book, and I therefore was mesmerized by watching that. As she finished the book, I said, just give me the book. I will take it and I will read it to my group this morning, because in child form, it actually encapsulates the main point that I want to make today. So the topic is leadership. So before we even get started, just quickly, just give me some attributes or some definitions of leadership or leaders. Just throw out some words so that we have a sense of what we're talking about. When you think of leadership, what do you think of?
Initiator.
Inspiring others.
Role model.
Someone take note of these, because I'm going to need them, every single one of them. Just quickly, that's the only thing that's missing here is a smart board. Or, okay, go ahead.
Listener.
Vision. Okay. Anybody else?
Decisive.
If I am not a leader, if I'm decisive, then by definition I'm a leader? or all leaders are decisive. It's a requirement of leadership, but I could theoretically be decisive and not be a leader. Okay, so I'm really looking for the things that are unique to leaders. Okay, what? Diplomatic.
What? They understand themselves for what they want.
But again, I would ask the question of, do I need to be a leader? You know, is that only the attribute of a leader, or don't all of us need to have a sense of what we want?
Convey it to others.
What? That you can convey to others. Okay, so just stop for a moment, because I would normally spend about 5 more minutes on this, because I think if we continued, we would get to exactly the same point, so we can just stop now. If you could just quickly read back to me and to everyone else the things that we just said.
We said initiator, listener, someone with vision, someone who's a role model, someone who is decisive, diplomatic, and someone who conveys what they want and what's important to others.
And inspires, I think,
and
that
inspires,
word is out
yes,
there too.
Exactly.
Okay. In almost, I would say, in 80% of the things that Eliana just read, okay, what is implied in the character trait of a leader? What's implied in every one of those? Let's just give them to me again. I have inspiring, good listener, diplomatic, conveys ideas to other ideas
visionary.
To others. Okay, visionary may not be in there. Okay, we'll see if visionary fits. And decisive, we decided, was not only a leader. Well, it's a requirement of a leader, but it's not. But it might be a requirement for other components as well.
A listener.
Anything? What's implied in every one of these?
Giving to others.
Okay, which in now therefore implies, just break it down to its tiniest little implication. What, by definition, what does a leader have to have?
Followers.
In other words, everything that a leader does by definition implies that there's somebody that I'm leading. If I'm not leading anybody, then I'm not a leader. Okay, now the reason I make that point is because if that is true, that by definition every leader has someone who's following, then there's another point that is true about every leader, and I just wrote 2 books that happens to be by the same author, but so I guess you can't use it as a proof text because it's the same guy, but here's his book called John Maxwell, called Developing the Leader Within You. Okay, he also has another book called Developing the Leaders Around You, and this one is as well, and in it he has the table of contents, and I'll just read it to you. Let's see how many of his criteria for leadership we have. Okay, and this is what he wrote. I'm reading, starting from number 2, I'm skipping number 1 purposely. Priorities, integrity, creating positive change, problem solving, attitude, people, vision, self-discipline. But here's definition number 1. And here's the critical point for what I'm trying to make. Okay, definition of leadership number 1 is influence. And his other book is called Becoming a Person of Influence. Okay, and that implies other people around. Okay, now follow me. Follow along, because we're going to get to the crux of the issue. And once we get to the crux of the issue, then I'll be able to actually talk about the topic that I'm supposed to be talking about, which is developing the leaders. Okay, and how do we know who they are? There's a website called simpletruths.com. Did I show you that stuff?
No.
Okay, fine. So did I show you Marty?
Yeah.
Did I show you guys Marty? Okay,
yeah.
Fine.
From
Walmart. What? From Walmart. Okay. There's a tiny little video that they show about a guy by the name of Marty, it really doesn't make a difference, who was a cashier at Walmart. And people used to line up, Dafka, to wait on Marty's line in order to have him check them out. Because what Marty would do whenever he checked anybody out was actually listen to them, spend a couple of minutes with them, and look them in the eye and show his appreciation for their shopping there, and spend literally a minute with each customer. But in that minute, he focused on them. And that meant that when you went shopping, instead of this completely, this experience of being completely anonymous, when you went to shop at that particular Walmart and you waited on Marty's line, you felt like somebody for a moment. Okay, now knowing that most people are walking around in their lives, especially when they're going shopping, feeling like I just have to get this shopping done and move on with my life. Hopefully in other parts of their life they're feeling important, but certainly while you're shopping you're not feeling particularly important. To go shopping and feel for a moment important made a difference, and because they felt that way, they would keep going back to that store and specifically keep going to Marty's line. And so therefore Marty became one of the one of the highest level employees as cashier that you could get to. He was not the material to be a manager of a store. He was a great cashier, but he had the highest rates of sales and whatever it is that they, and finally they gave him an award because year after year he excelled at what he did. So I ask you, so that's basically the video. So I ask you this question. Was Marty, by the general definition of the word leader, would we have considered Marty a leader? The answer would be absolutely not. And yet, after you realize that Marty made a difference to people's lives, at least for a moment, if the definition of leadership is influence, did he influence people?
Yes.
How?
Making them feel important.
First of all, he made them feel important, at least for that moment. How else did he influence people? He made their day better. They walked out with a little spring in their step because they got paid attention to. Okay, how else did he, what other influence did he have? He made them want to shop there, which then influenced the bottom line for Walmart. Okay, not getting into that, specific issue of whether we're pro or con the way Walmart runs its business. But the point is that he was, in fact, a person of influence. Now, and when you read about Marty, you discover that really he was a really very good man. He treated his wife very well. He wasn't wealthy, but he spent time with his family, and he had a nice, proper home, and he was a good guy. But more importantly, he took that good guy and used it to become excellent at what he did, even though what he did was not particularly in a leadership position. Yeah?
Yeah, he's very influential. He's wonderful. He's a nice guy. I wouldn't define any of those things as leadership.
Well, let's go back. Let's go back a step. Why, if leadership?
Start out by saying the definition of leadership is influence.
Well, if
I challenge that.
Oh, okay, fine. So if you challenge that, okay, why? Well, what? Why isn't it leadership?
It's one aspect of it.
Okay, one second.
Influence your idea.
Bingo. That's all. Right now, all I'm saying is
influential in so many other ways. If I get stuck into someone, I'm influencing them. I'm not really a leader.
Okay, so that's the point that I'm challenging. Okay, that's the point that I want to make today. Okay, and if you now speak to people around the world who are in positions of trying to influence people, one of the things that we're trying to accomplish is to get people to realize that those little things that you don't think are meaningful, all right, in an influential way, are in fact, if everybody took those little things that they were doing and recognized their value, then all of a sudden everybody's value in their own eyes goes up. And that basically was the point of that little book, one second, of the buckets. Okay, it's not how, not my, I don't want to accomplish my bucket list in life. That's not what my goal in life. My goal is to fill my bucket, and the only way to fill my bucket is to fill other people's buckets. And at the end of the day, if every single person valued that, then all of a sudden we have a society filled with people who are making a difference. Okay, and yeah.
I agree. I think they're incredibly valuable.
Right.
Incredibly important. They're incredibly. I'm just questioning why you're calling that leadership. Why the label seems wrong. Why is that leadership?
Well, I think what I'm challenging is that if we continue to think of leadership as only the people who can get up in front of the congregation or run an institution or have many followers, if that's the only definition of leadership, then that puts everybody else into a position of just being followers. And that concerns me for the impact that we're losing when we talk about the general population. As an educator on the high school level, okay, one of the greatest concerns we have about school in general is that school takes all those people who are good at school and puts them up on a pedestal by definition because their grades are up here. And anyone who struggles academically goes through not just 4 years of high school, but really 12, perhaps even 16 years of pain, of thinking that I'm really not that good. And what ends up happening is that where you have little kids who start out feeling very good about themselves, by the time they're finished with school, they're not. And one of the things that I really feel very strongly about, what school needs to be doing, is since we can't get away from the academic part of school, there's nothing we can do about that. As long as we are college-bound, college-oriented, as long as the world works according to the system of you need a degree in order to get the good jobs, and I'm not going to fight that battle, then the only battle I can fight is to take the kids that I have and make them feel like they are valuable even if they never get above a C, okay, or that their value is inherent. Is inherent into who they are, as opposed to the value is only coming from the notion that the world recognizes them as being valuable. Okay, so I think when I talk about developing the next generation of leaders, what I'm really trying to do is get everybody to a point where they recognize their inherent value and therefore are willing to go and maybe take a step out. Maybe not take a step out in the public arena, but take a step out in terms of the way they run their lives, and in the process of doing so, start that circle of influence that's much more powerful than they ever thought possible. And that's really where that's the core of what I'm talking about. Now, the problem with all of this is that we all know people who are incredibly influential, but they influence people in all the wrong ways. Okay, and that's challenge number one. And challenge number two, and I think the point that I was making before, but just from the reverse part, is that so many people are people of influence and have no clue that they are, and therefore are not leading in any meaningful way. They are influencing people, but they're not influencing them. They're not influencing them in a positive way, and because they don't realize that they're influencing people, they're oblivious to that power that they have, and continue to lead people in ways that they don't really intend to, because they don't think that they're doing anything that's influential. To wit, we're sitting in a shul, so not that this would ever happen in B'nai Shurim or in the Tina community, but we are all aware of shuls where people talk. And I dare say that the people who talk in shul are negative influencers and have no clue that they're doing it. As far as they're concerned, I'm talking to my friend. This has nothing to do with anybody else. How am I influencing you? But what they're doing is significantly influential, not just to their friend, not just to themselves, obviously, but to the media group around them, and therefore to the entire avirah of the shul. So, and that by definition starts to have, you know, major ramifications down the road, you know, as we continue this.
You want to call someone talking to a leader.
But that's my point. We're stuck on the definitions, and I'm trying to change the paradigm. Okay, that's really what my main point is that if we only think of ourselves as I'm just my name happens to be Joe, so it works out very well. I'm just Joe Schmo sitting in shul. Okay, then I've lost the power to recognize how much influence I really can have. Whereas if I recognize myself as I'm Joe Oratz who makes a difference, because that's the other definition of leadership, because that's what influence is a difference maker. I make a difference. Not I'm just one of a large group of 100 people or 500 people that are sitting in shul, but I personally make a difference, then by definition, I view myself completely differently. And that's the mindset that I'm trying to create. So, yeah, if we talk about leadership from the perspective of only those people who go out and do great things and big things, then that's a completely different view of leadership. But if we talk about leadership as recognizing the power that I have to make a difference, all right, and that difference grows exponentially, as we're going to talk about before we're done today, then all of a sudden, me sitting in shul, I am a leader. I make a difference. If we think those in those terms, that what I do actually makes a difference, then all of a sudden I view myself completely differently. Yes? No, by all means. This is the best way. The best classes, by the way, the best classes are the ones where my students challenge me, so please.
So if somebody organizes a rally on behalf of the
right.
That person in my mind is a leader.
Right.
Organizes the rally.
Right.
Every one of us who shows up at the rally is an influencer and is making a difference by showing up.
Right.
If someone showed up, it wouldn't be a rally.
Right.
But the person who organized the rally and got everyone to come out would be the leader in the traditional way of calling the leader.
Correct.
That doesn't mean that everyone who showed up didn't make a difference.
Right.
So I think there's two different, there's leaders and there's people who are not necessarily classically leaders but are making a difference by...
So then what I'm really talking about is becoming a person of influence, not becoming a leader.
Uh-huh.
Okay? I'll accept that as fair.
Okay.
But my concern is that most of us have stopped, you know, because our lives are so filled with the things that we need to do, our mindset often doesn't catch up with the fact that in fact we are really important to so many people, and we're not even realizing it. And again, that's one of the points that I want to make at the very end. Yes.
So if we're going to go according to that, like definition of leader as person of influence, then there's really no such thing as a follower.
Correct. Okay. You know, if you use that definition, definitionally. Now, obviously, in the case of a rally, you know, if I didn't organize it, I am influencing other people. But no, the fact of the matter is that the second I went to that rally, I can't be called a follower because I've now defined myself as someone who thinks that's important, which means that my circle of friends is now gonna change the way they look at things. Okay, because now they may disagree with me and they may fight me on it and they may go to the other direction. That's okay. I've also influenced them. Okay, but I have to recognize that every decision that I make actually makes a difference to somebody else. Yes.
I also have been skeptical of what like the meaning of leader is, but another thing we could add is a leader is someone who makes choices. Like, I guess it's part of decisiveness, but what makes a follower is maybe someone who doesn't make a choice independently on according to their values, let's say. Because they're
right.
To be followed.
Okay, right. In other words, if the choice that I make, very good, excellent. If the choice that I make is not because so-and-so said so, but because I reviewed my core values and made a decision that I agree with that core value, then all of a sudden I'm not following. I made my own decision. And I think that that's really what, maybe that's where I'm headed with this. Many, many years ago, I attended a, you guys are going to remember this very well. Many years ago, I attended a time management workshop. The point of the time management workshop was basically that if you're going to be successful in whatever you want to do, then you need to live your life according to your values. And therefore, you have to figure out what your values are, because what happens to many of us is that we have a set of values. And yet our lives sort of run away from us and we don't live our lives according to those values, and therefore we don't really get the things done that we want to get done. If we're going to be people of influence, then we need to have our core set of values. Once we have our core set of values, we then need to make sure that the point of this time management seminar was that first you have to define your core values, and then you have to make sure that what you're doing in life matches up with your core values. Okay, it's pretty straightforward, pretty obvious, except that so many of us, again, get so busy that either we never sit down to figure out what our core values are, or even if we are aware of them, we never align what we're doing together with our core values. He gives the example of a core value of the following scenario. Okay, I'm not going to go through the whole scenario for you in the interest of time, but basically, he calls on somebody in the audience and he says to them, you know, someone with a child, with a young child, and he says to them, okay, listen, I have this long construction beam sitting here outside in the parking lot. I'm going to stand on one side. You'll be on the other side. If you can, I'm going to have $20 in my hand. If you can just walk on the I-beam, don't fall off, and just walk across, I will give you the $20. Would you be willing to walk across? And of course, why not? Just walk across the I-beam and get the $20. He said, okay, now I'm going to change the scenario. I'm going to take the I-beam and I'm going to put it on two tall buildings and now, you know, very high up, and now you have to walk across this chasm. Would you be willing to walk across with the $20? And of course the answer is no. How about 500? How about 1,000? How about 10,000? How about 50,000? How about 100,000? And of course he's not willing to risk his life. He says, okay, I'm not a nice guy anymore. Now I have your child hanging over the edge of my cliff. All right? And now you're on that cliff. Would you walk across the beam in order to save your child? And of course the answer is, I'll do anything I need to in order to save my child. Okay? So he says, okay, so here we had three values. We had money, we had safety, and we had child. Okay? money was important, safety was important, child was more important. Okay, so saving the child was a core value, and obviously on a higher level than money or safety. Okay, if we don't figure out, so the question really becomes, if I'm going to influence people, wouldn't it be a good idea if I influence them according to a set of core values that I'm really truly willing to not only live by, but actually sacrifice for? And of course, we have that set of core values as a general rule when we talk about Torah and mitzvos, but each of us in our own way does have our own set of core values. For some people, family is a higher value than friends. For others, it's the other way around, and perhaps that has to do with the time of life. Is integrity a higher value or loyalty a higher value? And of course, how you have to, A, know that those two are values of yours, and second of all, which one is more important, which one's less important. I think this point is basically saying that if, in fact, we accept the notion that everything we do influences other people, then it becomes mission critical for us to actually know exactly what our values are, because otherwise I end up influencing people in ways that I never intended to influence them. I've been given the 2 or 3 minute warning, so I want to read you a poem and tell you a quick story. Okay, the story is it's a old story that I heard about. This guy's walking along the beach and someone's watching him, and he can't see, he's from standing very far away. He sees the guy walk along the beach, bends down, he picks something up and he throws it. And he walks along the beach and he bends down, he picks something up and he throws it. And then the guy sort of come getting closer and closer, and he sees that the beach is filled with starfish that have been stuck on the beach. And there's thousands of starfish along the beach, and this guy just walking along, picking up the starfish and throwing it back in, and walks along, picks up the starfish and throws it back in. So the guy comes along to him and says, "What are you doing?" He says, "Well, I'm picking up starfish and throwing it back in." He goes, "You're never going to be able to make, like, how are you going to make a difference? There's thousands of starfish here." Picks up a starfish and he says, "Makes a difference to this one," and he throws it back in. Okay, difference makers, we become difference makers by worrying about ones. Because as you worry about one becomes two becomes four, et cetera, et cetera. So I know that our paradigm of leadership is stuck in our minds as only the people who organize this stuff. I'm telling you, they became that way because they started caring about ones before they started caring about manys. And last but not least, I do want to read you a poem. It's a very famous poem. You probably have heard it, by Linda Ellis. And I think it sort of speaks to the notion that if we're not clear about what our values are throughout our lives, then we're going to have a very difficult time in influencing other people. And after I read this, I'll give you a suggestion, excellent suggestion for the adults amongst us, the older adults amongst us, the younger set. It might be a little bit cowed by this, but I think you should do it anyway. I read of a man who stood to speak at the funeral of a friend. He referred to the dates on the tombstone, from the beginning to the end. He noted that first came the date of birth and spoke the following date with tears, but he said what mattered most of all was the dash between those years. For that dash represents all the time that they spent alive on earth, and now only those who love them know what that little line is worth. For it matters not how much we own, the cars, the house, the cash. What matters is how we live and love and how we spend our dash. So think about this long and hard. Are there things you'd like to change? For you never know how much time is left. That can still be rearranged. If we could just slow down enough to consider what's true and real, and always try to understand the way other people feel, and be less quick to anger, and show appreciation more, and love the people in our lives like we've never loved before. If we treat each other with respect and more often wear a smile, remembering that this special dash might only last a little while. So when your eulogy is being read, with your life's actions to rehash, would you be proud of the things they say about how you spent your dash? I think that one of the best exercises that was ever suggested to me was to write your own eulogy. Write down what you want them to say about you in 120 years. For those of us who are past the 50-year mark, it's a little bit easier for us to even imagine the notion that that time will come. For those of you who are under the 30-year mark, it's not so easy to even comprehend it. But a fantastic exercise, because once you identify what you want people to say about you, what you've just identified is the difference that you made in the world. If you can live your life by thinking to yourself, I actually make a difference and I want to live my life according to the values that are going to make a difference, then all of a sudden your entire life becomes a life of influence. I would like to respectfully suggest and humbly suggest that as we try to identify the next generation's leaders, instead of trying to figure out who is the one who's going to be the, okay, so I have geo presidents, and I have, heads of the yearbook, and I have the heads of Tzedakah and Chesed, and whatever it is, and we have the people who organize the rallies, okay? But for me to try to identify who those people are going to be, truth to tell, I look at my graduates today, I have no idea who the leaders are going to be. But I do know one thing, whoever they are, whether they are in leadership positions or not, they are going to be people of influence. And therefore, when we identify our leaders, what we're really saying is, it's a universal model. Everyone has the power to influence, and our job as we identify our students being the ones in our classrooms is to basically get them to the point where they recognize that notion that they have a dash to live, and it is not a mad dash, it is a marathon. They have a lifetime to live, and at the end of that lifetime, if in fact they can live according to their core values, those values that they would be willing to cross that I-beam for, okay, then we have actually succeeded in creating at least the leaders of people of influence. Thank you very much.